On the comment program this morning, we have the opportunity to visit with Gordon Warwick, who is a retired National Park Service employee on the program. We're going to talk birds, but Gordon, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you. You spent your career with the National Park Service, or most of it anyway, right? And retired from there a year ago, something like that?
Yeah, I retired after 6 years here in Valentine for the Park Service, but most of my career was with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for about 25 years.
So have you always had this interest in, I want to say, aviation's not the right word, and I can't think of what the word is, birds. Let's call it birds, all right?
Yeah, avifauna would be one way to say it. But yeah, I have. I can't remember when it started. I grew up on a farm, and of course we had domestic birds around, but we had a Peterson Field Guide to the Birds I grew up with, and I apparently scribbled in, so I was introduced to birds at a very early age.
Do you still have that book?
We still do have it. I don't know if I have it on my shelf or it's back home on the farm.
But you've got your scribbles and everything.
Oh, yeah. They're still there.
Okay. So what made you interested? I mean, were you looking out the window in school one day and wondering how them birds did that or about them? Or what got you kind of fired up about studying birds and learning more?
Well, it may have been because I had more of an interest in art for whatever reason. So when I would see something in nature that inspired me, I would always go out and try to draw it or color pencil it. And I never was very good at that, but that always inspired me, and I was always curious about what they were doing and just how beautiful they were.
Well, and you do a lot of photography with birds, don't you, and nature, wildlife things?
Yeah, I do. I've been an amateur nature photographer for many, many years, and fortunately, I guess, or what I enjoy was seeing some of my photographs published in some of the fish and wildlife publications and a few magazines, and I am trying to sell a few now too.
Oh, okay. So is there a place that people can find out about some of those photographs that maybe they'd like to hang up on their wall or something?
Yeah, I've tried to start a little business here since I retired, and I wanted to stay involved with birds and nature. So I've started a little business where I'll try to guide nature-oriented hikes, bird-watching trips. It could be flower and plant identification. But I also have photographs on there for sale that are nature-oriented, mostly from the local area.
Okay. So that we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up in here. But birds, I've had people that have said, you know, it just doesn't seem like we see as many birds around, whether it's a game bird or whether it's a songbird. And is that something that you've been watching it closer than most people for a long time? Are you seeing that?
I can't say that I could observe it individually. It's awfully hard to make those kind of assessments from an individual or over a short period of time. But I do pay attention to the news and nature magazines and publications. And one story I did pick up on a year or two ago that really almost shocked me. It said that there was a 29% reduction in the total number of individual birds in U.S. and Canada over the last 50 years. And that's just an incredible number. I hope that trend doesn't continue. But just with development and human population pressures, that's not totally unexpected. But the news isn't all bad either, I guess. That's kind of a sobering thought. But more locally, we have had more of an influx in some of the species that we didn't see here in the past. A lot of southern birds have been moving north and breeding here or spending the winter here. So at least locally, we're able to see more birds maybe than we did 50 years ago.
Well, that brings me to there was an article out a few months ago. I can't remember exactly when it was, about a Louisiana water thrush is the name of this bird. Now, Louisiana tells me that this bird is not something that normally we would see here or expect to see in Nebraska, northern Nebraska anyway, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's a southeastern species, as its name kind of implies. And they have bred in the southeast Nebraska more recently. And they've actually, a lot of people didn't know very much about them because they're so secretive, but they were discovered there and they're kind of established in southeast Nebraska where they were at. But last year, an expert birder was up here volunteering at Fort Niobrara Refuge and discovered one carrying food at Fort Niobrara Refuge at the Fort Falls Trail. So that indicates breeding, and that was a big jump from its southeastern range in Nebraska. So that got the bird community pretty excited. And shortly, actually the same time, one was seen or heard at Smith Falls. So that really was a big news. And the question is, do they extend all the way up the Niobrara River Valley and hadn't been found? Or is it just a disjunct population that occurs here separate from those southeastern birds? So this year, anyway, since I was retired and I had a little extra time, I started exploring some of the Spring Branch canyons and trying to see what was in there for the Louisiana water thrush, and did document at least three other additional sites. So we have at least five sites currently, and there's sure to be more where they're actually breeding Louisiana water thrush. So it's kind of a neat thing for the Nebraska birders.
What does it look like? I mean, how big of a bird is it? What does it look like?
Well, it's probably about the size of a bluebird, and it likes those little waterfalls and those little creeks, and usually where it's nesting, you can hear running water and falling water. Whether that's an attractor or not, I don't know. And then when I've seen it foraging, it's actually foraging on the sides of those waterfalls at the very edge where things are washing over the side, invertebrates, aquatic insect invertebrates mostly. So it's in those deep, cool Spring Branch canyons.
So what's the key to getting a glimpse of a Louisiana water thrush? I mean, you have to put in a blind? Do you just sit very still, get your binoculars? What do you got to do?
Well, one of the best ways, if you're interested in seeing birds, is to learn their song a little bit. And Louisiana water thrush particularly is pretty secretive. So if you know its song or can identify its song, then you know when it's present and you can be a lot more watchful and sit and wait and watch. Otherwise, get into those Spring Branch canyons. They're really tough to get into, but the trail there at Fort Falls does allow access. And that's where I spent most of my time, just getting familiar with the species, because you can see them foraging along the edge of the creek there when they are present. They might be there for a short time, then they're going to migrate south, and they'll be back early next spring. And almost certainly they'll be there at the Fort Falls Trail again.
Do they come back to the same spot? I mean, like other birds, they come back to the Capistrano or whatever?
Well, typically the bird will return to its former breeding area if it was successful. And I guess, in this case, at Fort Falls Trail, they were very close to fledging youngs. I was watching them carrying food. They had their mouths full of a lot of big, large food. So they were very close to fledging, which is when they reach flight stage. So my assumption is that they successfully fledged, and they will very probably be back next year.
Hmm. Interesting. So let me back up in here. Amateur, you called yourself an amateur guy at this, but it sounds to me like you're the expert. You do good on photography. Amateur just means you haven't sold a lot of stuff yet, right? Is that what that is?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to be a little bit humble. I've sold a few things, but not a lot. I've had photographs published, oftentimes without pay. But that's still fun and exciting, and I like to share my photographs regardless.
So if there's somebody out there listening, maybe they're a youngster, maybe they're an adult. I've hunted, and I think it's interesting when you're just sitting in nature and you're watching things, being still and quiet, all the different things that can be going on around you. And I'm sure bird watching is the same kind of thing. If you're sitting there, you'll see a lot of things that you don't see just walking through the canyon or something.
That's exactly right. The behavior of the birds and all wildlife will become quite different if you sit and watch. And for some species, you're just not going to see them, or you're going to catch a glimpse of them if you're moving. But if you have the patience to sit still, and I guess you have the time to do that, that's really the way to get out and appreciate nature.
What kind of equipment? Let's start with just watching birds. And then let's go to maybe photographing birds. Any key equipment people could start with?
Well, binoculars is pretty much a must. I mean, you can see birds and you can identify a lot of birds without, but they can be relatively inexpensive, and they enhance your experience so much more. And really, that's almost all you need now. I mean, most people have what they call a bird book, an identification guide that they would carry with them, but you can also just go to your phone now and Google information and bring up pictures and photographs and even the recordings. So you could get by with very little to do the actual bird watching.
I know my wife has an app that identifies plants. She takes a picture of a leaf, it'll tell you what plant that is. So I would think there'd be something out there for birds that if you got a good enough picture of it and you could have that app, it would just tell you this is what this is, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure there is, and I'm quite confident there's also apps that if you record the song, if you're able to record the song onto your smartphone, it can identify it for you too.
So you can get into bird watching fairly inexpensive and spend about as much time with it. Now, you've talked about being out on the Niobrara River and several spottings or the Louisiana water thrush. I'm sure you get to other areas, maybe out to the Valentine South Refuge or other areas where you can hike in to see prairie birds and stuff.
Yeah, I go down to Valentine Refuge a fair amount, too. It's a little different experience down there. The species are actually quite a bit different. There's a lot of grassland birds, obviously, but there's a lot of wetlands and water-associated birds. And sometimes a spotting scope can be handy for something like that because you're probably going to be at a greater distance so you don't scare them or they're across the lake and you can watch them that way. But, yeah, between the two refuges, just a tremendous amount of bird diversity. I bothered to look and see that the Fort Niobrara Refuge bird list is over 250 species documented, and I think the Valentine Refuge is much greater than that.
So now, do you spend time watching mallard ducks as well as Louisiana water thrush and those kind of things? Are you into those game birds? Or?
Well, I grew up hunting, and I still do hunt a little bit. I guess I'll say that since I worked for the Fish and Wildlife Service for so many years, I've been counting ducks for refuges for their records and reports for so many years that I kind of pass over the waterfowl a little bit right now. And if I don't have to count them, that's definitely a plus.
All right. So you've been at this for a lot of years. And let's just say the last 6 years or so that you've been in our area or with the Wildlife Service, what is the weirdest out-of-place bird that you've seen in the area, in this area, I guess?
Well, there's been a few, and some of them right near my house, just outside of town. One of the biggest surprises probably was two falls ago, late summer, that there were five raptors sitting in a tree across the fence from my place. And I puzzled over what they were for a while, and I got close enough and I took pictures. But they were Mississippi kites, and that's a southern species, maybe more southwestern. It's moved into southwestern Nebraska anyway. And that might be the northernmost occurrence in Nebraska that's been documented. But they were five juveniles, so they had fledged. They left their nest. Sometimes fledglings will fly north. It's called post-breeding dispersal. They'll go north of where they've actually were raised at, and there they were sitting across the fence from me, and that was quite a surprise. I knew them from New Mexico and other places, so it was nice to actually see them almost in my backyard.
Okay. Now, several years ago, we had sightings of a snow owl, a great white owl in our area, which is not normal, but probably not quite as rare as that one.
No, the snowy owl, they come down periodically when there's a long cold winter or when there's a shortage of lemmings that they feed on up in the tundra. It's mostly young birds, and apparently a lot of them don't find their way back. They end up dying, I guess, en route. But it's not too unusual. The further north you go, the more likely you are to see snowy owls in the winter, but they do occasionally get down here.
Okay. So, you know, I was going to ask you about Canada geese. I know that's a waterfowl, and probably you're not paying attention to them, but it seems like our Canada geese population over the last 10 years, they've become more localized. They don't go all the way south. They don't go all the way north. It seems like you have local. Has that always been the case where you've had local geese populations that don't leave an area?
Not so much here. I guess I'm going to go out on a limb and say the winters were a little colder probably in the past. And there weren't Canada geese here to speak of 50 years ago. There were very, very few. But the Game and Parks Commission and other state game agencies released Canada geese onto the Sandhill Lakes and other areas. And I helped with that actually as a temporary employee many, many years ago and released some Canada geese onto some Sandhill Lakes. And obviously they've been very, very successful, maybe too successful. And They'll hang around town and eat grass in lawns and in parks. And as long as there's open water in the winter and there's a food supply, which is usually grain in fields, they'll stick around here in the wintertime.
Okay. Well, of course, geese normally migrate, and everybody's familiar with that V pattern that they fly in. But have you ever had the question about why, when they're migrating and they're flying in a V, there's one side of the V is always longer than the other?
Well, if anybody's asked me that, I don't know what the answer is. There's probably some aerodynamic answer to that. But
that's what I thought. And then they said, no, there's just more geese in that side of the line. I'm like, I was thinking there's an aerodynamic thing to it, too.
Yeah, I guess it's how deep you want to go into it, probably.
there might be something else to that. But that's a fascination in itself, is geese and their migration and how they change positions and stuff like that. All right, so Gordon, we've got a couple minutes left in here. What else did you have that we wanted to make sure we discussed about birds today? We might ask people if anybody's interested in giving us a call. They could call us, and we'll put you on the air, and you can ask a question out there. But let's see. Okay, let's go back again and talk about your website and your photographs, how people can find access to look at those, and then maybe contact you about your book and about those photographs.
Okay, yeah, my business website address is niobraranature.com. So niobraranature, all one word, .com. And there's photographs on there for sale. And then, of course, there's information about my guide service that I'm starting here, too.
So you'll take people out to show them and then help them. Okay.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I mean, I've done that for a long time, either with friends, but mostly, I guess, with working for the various federal agencies. We'll always end up being an interpreter and taking people out and various groups out. And when I worked for the Audubon Society, too, for a while, and that was a common thing to do there. So I've done that a lot, and I certainly enjoy sharing my interest in birds with other people.
Cool. Good. So there's another book out there, Birds of Nebraska, right? Is that Jim's book?
Jim Ducey does have a book, but it's not Birds of Nebraska. I'm not sure exactly what that is. There are a couple of different books that might have Nebraska birds listed in them. Jim's book was more of a history and looked at the way the Native American culture used. And he's going to get mad at me now because I can't think of what Birds of the Untamed West, I believe that is the name of his book. And it is in the bookstore here in town.
Okay. And so your contact information again, Gordon, if somebody's interested in saying, hey, I'd be interested in having you take me and show me where I can find some cool birds, those kind of things, and information about your website again.
Yeah, niobraranature.com.
Okay. Sums it up pretty quick then. That's how they can contact you. So, all right. Well, that's great. I think it's interesting to talk about birds. That's something that, you know, we see them around. We don't pay attention to them a lot. But I do have a bird feeder at home it's a lot of songbirds. And I kind of found out that blue jays are mean, I think, anyway. Seems like when the blue jay shows up anywhere close and all the wrens and everything else, they vacate to the cedar trees.
Yeah, blue jays have that reputation, and I make sure they get a little bit of food, but I'll try to arrange it so they can't get everything.
All right. Well, Gordon, anything else that we need to? Oh, we got a phone call, so let's do that before we
all
go.
All right.
See what. All right. Good morning. This is Comment.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning,
I'm Gordon. This is Rhonda. I'm calling from Canada.
What? Oh, cool.
And I'm calling from Canada. I'm going to be, well, I'm a birder, and I totally am loving your program today. So, and I'm going to be there next week. So I always like to come down and look at, you know, see all the species that are there that we don't have here. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. All of it. Awesome.
So, Gordon, if she's coming next week, what kind of birds are she going to be able to see here midsummer in the hot weather?
Well, almost all of the breeding birds are still here. Nothing has really left the area yet. They're not as vocal, so they're a little harder to find. But anywhere along the Niobrara River, Fort Niobrara Refuge, certainly, Smith Falls State Park, Government Canyon, Those are all good places, high diversities. And, of course, Valentine Refuge for shorebirds and waterbirds is another good location.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right.
Yeah.
Any other any other questions, Rhonda? Or?
Not really. I'll be there and I'll be birding as always with my camera.
Oh, good.
Good luck.
All right. Well, thanks for calling.
Yeah,
appreciate you listening. All right. Have a great day.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You too.
There we are. We have an international listening audience there, Gordon. How about that?
That's great. I never expected that.
Well, we have a lot of folks that listen online that get out on the World Wide Web. So anyway, great. I think it's been interesting to find out more about this. If you find any other great discoveries out there, whether they're raptor birds or thrush birds or whatever, let us know, and we'll get you back on here and break the news to the world or something, Gordon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Gordon Warwick has been our guest on this portion of the comment program this morning. And we thank you for listening. We'll be back with more of the comment program coming right up.